Welcome to the B Show.
The B Show.
The B Show.
A wrestling podcast.
Yo, what's up, everybody? It's a brand new edition of The B Show, a wrestling podcast. It's Dixon and Fancy J.
Hey, hey.
And my buddy Ryan's sitting in. He threw his hat into the ring.
What's up, Ryan?
To potentially take over the third seat coming up. We wanted to give him an opportunity to come in, see how it happens.
See how the magic happens.
He can tolerate Jay. And, you know, next week I think we're going to have Patrick in to sit, and then the following week will be Jason. And then at that point we'll probably do, like, full-on tryouts or... They can become a three-headed monster that all take turns. One way or another, we'll fill that third seat somehow, some way.
I'm excited. As long as they know that I'm the producer, that's all that matters.
Oh, yeah, you're the producer, bro.
So, how was your last week? Crazy?
Not bad. The head cold is finally pretty much gone.
Sound better.
You know, everything kind of slowed down. Didn't have a boatload of shows to go attend after... a long week of work, which was nice. I got to hang out with my almost 3-year-old niece for an entire weekend.
Wow.
We partied like 3-year-olds.
That's awesome.
She's one of my favorite human beings on the planet.
I have a 3-year-old. That's a great age.
Well,
tiring age.
She's a special needs kid. Okay. She's got cerebral palsy. Doesn't really interact well with other human beings, but for some reason, her and I have this connection, you know, like I was the one that held her while her mom and dad got married and all of these other things. There's something her and I share that, you know, it's a good feeling knowing
that's
that
awesome.
Like, you know, there's this little person that genuinely likes you.
She sees you and her eyes light up and she's all excited.
All I gotta do is make my classic like in picture grumpy face and she just cracks right up. It's awesome.
Now, is that from your side or your wife's?
It's my wife's sister's kid. But yeah, I had her for the whole weekend. Like we spent all day together, played her some Mozart. She rocked out. We ate Cheerios.
Nice.
We went to the Apple Festival. It was a good time.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'm good. So wrestling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather hang out with my niece.
I know, right? Same here. Let me turn off my phone. So last week we started this, topic, little segment as far as, 80 movies that, you know, aren't that everybody knows, the Godfathers, the Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, those type of Raiders of the Lost Ark. So we were trying to pick some movies that that our younger listeners might not have checked out. So what's your pick this week?
Legend of Billie Jean.
Oh, my gosh. You went there.
Yeah.
Used to watch
young
that.
Christian Slater and Helen Slater, who not my typical type of girl, but she was smoking hot in that movie.
Short blonde hair.
Yeah. And Yeardley Smith also appeared in that movie. Can you tell me the importance of Yeardley Smith and what she went on to do post Legend of Billie Jean?
I'd have to see her face. I don't know who she is.
She's the voice of Lisa Simpson.
Oh, yes. And also in Herman's Head.
Yes. Another late 80s, early 90s
love
Fox
that show.
Sitcom.
Living Color, Herman's Head, Married with Children, The Simpsons, all on that Sunday block.
And which one only lasted a year and a half?
Yep.
Herman's Head.
Yep, exactly. That's a great choice. That used to be on repeat on HBO all the time. Watched that with my mom. Wasn't she like, didn't she, like, there was a rumor that she was going to kill herself or she tried to commit suicide and... What was the legend behind the whole Billie Jean?
Oh, so Christian Slater's character has a sweet moped.
Okay.
And there's a rival of his that's, you know, a few years older. He's like a freshman. These kids are like seniors. And his sister, the hot girl Helen Slater in the movie, turned down the jock type character. And in response, he went and trashed Christian Slater's moped. And then they went to the dude's dad's place, which was, this is a California setting. So it's on the beach. He's selling beachwear.
Yep.
She shows up, tries to get the money from the dude's dad. And he basically like pulls the classic, you know, pre-rape scenario kind of thing. She kicks him in the balls and goes. And somehow in the whole context of it, Christian Slater finds a gun under the counter and shoots this guy. And then they go on the lam.
That's what it was. I remember.
And then it's like on the national news. And this is all happening in like. I believe it was like the beach communities around Texas.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a great movie. It's a little cheesy at times, but it does have the best Pat Benatar song of all time in it, which was Invincible.
It's a great song.
Anthemic.
It's a great song. Yeah. It's very, the cinematography in that movie is great. Like when she's on the dock and looking over, and she's got I guess like a bikini bottom, but then she's got like the wetsuit up top.
Mm-hmm.
And you got that short blonde hair. I'll never
very
forget
Corey
that
Glover.
Image. Yep.
And a little side note, the dude that ends up being her romantic interest in this movie was the son of Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That is a classic. All right. Mine is a little bit more well known, but every time I talk to young people, they have not seen this. It's Weird Science.
It was all right. I mean, it was definitely a mainstream movie. Like
it was mainstream, but I feel like it's mainstream for you and I. Like if you talk to anybody who grew up in the, because we're old. But if you talk to younger people,
you just admitted it. You admitted.
Oh, I'm old. Not as old as you. But it's written, directed by the late John Hughes. you, of course you do. Stars Anthony Michael Hall. That was like this came out in '85, so he had that Breakfast Club, both in '85, and then
Johnny
Pretty
B.
in
Good.
Pink or Sweet 16 the year before.
16 Candles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what did I say? Sweet 16?
You said Sweet 16.
16 Candles. Gosh, it's the vodka already going. But basically, dude, Bill Paxton as the older brother who just torments him. And if anybody wants to know what a woman looked like in the 80s that was absolutely gorgeous,
Kelly LeBrock.
She was phenomenal in that one. I just remember being a little guy and being like, you can hook up a doll and she's going to look like that. And
you tried
to shower
this,
with
you?
Her. I didn't try it, but I definitely imagined it.
Those little underwear in that first scene where she comes out of the closet in the half shirt.
The little blue with the hat. Unbelievable. So that's our pick. So Legend of Billie Jean. And,
Legend of Billie Jean. Available on Netflix.
And Weird Science. Same. Fantasy football update.
We both lost. You're the bigger loser. Like in life. And you're still going to shave your head. You're going to lose when week 9 rolls along and you get blown out 143-62.
You're pretty confident right now. You've
had
some
confident, sir. I am cocky.
You've had some injuries and you were so confident that you were going to have another bet, which I just didn't take, that you were going to go undefeated. And then the very next week you lose.
Well,
so keep talking. Keep
talking. It's my own fault. But no, in the grand scheme of things, if you compare the teams side by side, and I've done this with a lot of people, you are going to get spanked.
You what? You went
my,
through
my
to our
week? My prediction now is that you're going to end up 7-9.
No.
Yes.
I've never, ever, finished under 500, and I will make the playoffs.
This will be the first year.
All right. We'll see.
7-9 to my 12-4.
Dude.
One of those wins being head-to-head versus you.
So you were going to go 16-0, and now you're going to be 12-4.
Well, injuries, man.
Oh, okay. 1 week, all of a sudden injuries. All right, so we'll see.
No, it was actually 2 weeks ago because that side bet was on the podcast that got ruined by our former producer.
Yeah, the guy who's fired. I heard my voice. It was not that bad.
It was pretty terrible.
Yeah, the first ones did suck. So we're going to do a new little segment here in the opening when you guys can get to know us better. And this will be cool when we add a third person in. I didn't run this by Dixon as far as what I'm going to call it, but I like mixtape the B-side.
Yeah.
Well, come up with something better.
Makes it feel like it's always going to be music. Now, granted, today I am going to go to the music side of things, but
I went with the names because it's the B side of A side is usually the choice cuts, which is wrestling. The B side is the
it's
side
confusing.
Stuff, extra stuff. Well, you know what? Come up with a damn better name.
I will.
And my wife came up with like the weekend, like the Buzz Week or something like that. Trying to do something with B. You don't like that?
The Buzz.
Bzzz.
What's the buzz?
And then I can go bzzz.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Oh, screw you then. All right, so
no offense.
This segment, we're going to give a listener something that's outside the wrestling world that we think they should check out. Dixon, go first.
Zach De La Roca from Rage Against the Machine put out a single called Digging for Windows. It bums me out that he didn't participate when the members of Rage Against the Machine got back together, mostly just because I hate the sound of Be Real from Cypress Hill's voice on the majority of that record. I also feel like in this day and age when there's so much political strife and so much going on in America, that the one clear voice that's always stood out was Zach's. And for him to refuse to come back over some very petty and menial things to Rage Against the Machine, but still put out a song on his own, it does bother me. But then when you hear Digging for Windows, everything goes right out the window. This thing is stark and raw and dangerous sounding.
It's new?
Like this is, yeah, I mean, it's barely 3 weeks old. Like, and I've pumped it probably, no exaggeration, I've listened to that song probably 300 times.
What would you compare it to? Like in what?
Nothing. There's not. I mean, it's definitively Zach De La Rocha. So whether you're a fan of Rage Against the Machine or One Day as a Lion or the stuff that he did with Blackalicious that kind of leaked but never really got out there, I mean, it's Zach. It is his rhyming style, his cadences, his opinions, but the beat itself is very minimal. It's almost like something that you would hear on like an early Prodigy record. It's just this thumping, almost pseudo-industrial dance sound. And then when it kicks in, it's got like these 80s hip-hop flourishes that go alongside this stark, stripped-down, almost industrial sounding backbeat.
I'm definitely gonna have to check that out.
And it's what the world needs right now. An element of danger, something to bridge what's going on in the world of rock to the real world.
There's been a lot of really good different style of music that's come out in the last 4-6 months, and you've opened my eyes up to a lot of that. But was it Steels and Banks?
Banks and Steels. Paul Banks from Interpol, the RZA from Wu-Tang Clan.
That album is phenomenal. I play that every day. De La Soul's new album is phenomenal, and it's a different style of hip-hop.
Don't get me wrong, I like De La, but the production element of that record is just bunk.
Bunk in what way? I loved it. It was just so many different genres.
No, I'm talking the actual, like, the overall sound of the album. I feel like whoever produced that album
has it like a
dropped
distant,
the ball.
It's not as clear.
It robs De La Soul of their signature sound, in my opinion. I think
it's definitely not an original De La Soul.
No,
sound.
It's not warm and fuzzy. It almost comes off clinical.
Yeah. Who was the what's the group that we were just talking about the other day that I really liked?
Barnes Courtney.
Yes, that's a great one. Definitely check that. Check that album.
Dude out of the UK named Barnaby.
UK is killing it right now.
Dude, there's two places that fantastic music are coming from right now, and it's Nashville and the UK.
Really? Nashville, like countryside or Nashville rock side?
There's two bands making big waves at alternative radio right now that are both from Nashville, and that's Judah and the Lion and Coin.
Coin and Judah are both from Nashville?
Yeah. Now, Judah's not like naturally from Nashville. They're all dudes that are from all over the country that went to Nashville because it really is one of many big industry scenes in our country. Like, you don't have to move to New York or LA anymore. You can go to Austin. You can go to Nashville. You can even go to Memphis. And, you know, there's places in Colorado where bands are breaking. Like,
it's like back in the day when you would have, you know, Chicago and, you know, you could even do some stuff. You could do a Milwaukee. You could do. It's like that in the film industry now. You get, you know, Atlanta has studios and
absolutely.
You're shooting in North
Any
Carolina.
Any top 10 market. Miami.
Miami, yep. So my pick is a little, it's not in the music world. It's something that comes out on Friday, is Luke Cage, which is coming out streaming on Netflix. So this is a Marvel character. I'm not a Marvel fan. I'm not a big fanboy. But this is a different style show than what you have seen, whether it's on ABC, their stuff, or even in the previous Netflix Marvel character shows. So it's basically about a guy given super strength and durability and a sabotage experiment. He's wrongly accused. He escapes prison, and then he becomes like a superhero for the hire.
So but it's Punisher?
No, because he doesn't lose a family. Basically,
so it's Deadpool?
No, because he doesn't lose his girl. And Deadpool,
I'm just busting your balls.
No. Those are good questions. It's an iconic role. It's one of the, you know, first and most important black superhero roles. The guy who showrun it and created it, Cheo Coker, I worked with him. He's a friend. I did Notorious with him.
So you're plugging a buddy's thing.
I'm not plugging a buddy. I haven't seen it.
Let's see how it is.
Yeah. Well,
yo, you should see my friend's band. They're awesome.
Yeah, and you do that.
Not on here.
No. No, I actually haven't seen this, but the reviews that have come in are saying how awesome it is. The whole series drops on Friday on Netflix. It's got a very, the style, the music, the action is from the 70s, the grittiness of the 80s, all wrapped up in Harlem. It's something that you haven't seen before, grittiness-wise. I've seen the pilot, and it was amazing. Like, all I wanted to do was binge and watch the next one. It's not the cheesy superhero stuff. Yes, he has super strength, but it's got elements of The Wire in it. The Shield. So it's that grittiness that you're going to get for the first time. So I highly recommend checking that out. It streams on Friday, September 30th.
Luke Cage. I'm sure it's no Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot fell off in season two.
I don't think so.
It was good.
That's a conversation for next
yeah,
week.
Yeah, that is. So let's get into the week in wrestling.
Oh, boy.
Our first topic is Clash of Champions. Not the champions, but just Clash of Champions. They wanted to take away the. Did you know this?
Yes.
Yeah. Why do you think they did that?
So that they can impose a new copyright that they own and not one of the recurrent WCW ones that they get paid less money on.
Really? That's why it happens?
Basically, yeah.
If you own it, you get less money on it?
It's not a matter of that. It's when you forge a new trademark, there's more money to be made in the first, I don't remember if it's like 3 years, 5 years, something like that.
All right. So, interesting. So I'm going to give you my thought on it, and then you tell me if you even want to continue and what your thoughts on it. Big takeaway from this pay-per-view was KO retaining the title, Rollins' injury. If you have any other thoughts, let us know. But basically, it's
I would like to point out, for the record, that I accurately predicted the end of the Best of Seven series. Like, nailed it. Well, and not in a way where, like, you're picking a winner. Like, I straight called that it was going to end in a schmoz and that there was going to be no decisive winner for 7 weeks. And I even brought up the fact that they might stuff them together in a tag team.
You did, but at the end, you still pick Sheamus. You said, that's what I want to, but if I had to pick somebody, I'll go Sheamus.
No, so, you forced me to pick somebody. You know, we'll go back and listen.
We both picked Nia Jax. KO, we both picked. You had New Day, or I had New Day. You had the club. Both picked Charlotte. We both picked Zayn. Missed that one. We both had Rusev. Missed that
How
one.
How is it that this is a dude that you absolutely love in Sami Zayn, and you can't spell his name right on the run sheet?
First of all, I dropped an E, and I didn't spell this. This is copy and pasted from the internet.
No, I'm talking your part. Now, I don't even have that part, dude. I don't have that page with the weird box.
What part are you talking about?
I'm talking about Clash of Champion highlights.
Oh, I copied and pasted that, too. You think I'm spelling out all those people? I copy and pasted that. First of all, I am a huge Jericho mark right now.
Oh,
I am huge. He is the best on the mic. And the most entertaining on Raw.
If he would just
and
stay out of
Miz
the ring,
is the best on SmackDown.
If he would just stay out of the ring, I would concur with you. But he insists on being a chubby little lesbian that can't work at the same rate that he did even a year ago. Like he is slowly declining physically to a point where he's embarrassing himself in a lot of ways in the ring.
But he helps with the story. He helps with character.
I don't care about that.
When Zayn beats him, it'll be a big deal because he's beating a legend. Even if the legend is slacking, it's still that. And he's the most entertaining out there. Besides KO, he's the only one that's doing anything that's somewhat...
See, this is where you and I differ because, in my opinion, Jericho is groan-inducing most of the time. Jericho always has this thing where he connects on a level and then overdoes the line.
Overdoes the line. Really?
Or whatever it is, yeah.
See, I think that one of the few wrestlers who's been able to have... evolve his character in so many different ways over the years and make him work almost every single time.
Right, and then it gets to a point of diminishing returns where, like, now, like, he won't let them make a stupid idiot shirt because he feels like he's a heel and he shouldn't. But by the same token, like, you're the one that's taken that to the point. Like, you might as well just make the money off it.
How do you know that they won't do that inside?
It came out on one of the dirt sheets last week.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he'll have a shirt that says The List? You're on The List?
No, because he's a heel and he won't do that.
Every other freaking heel.
He's Canadian, man.
Well, he's probably got so much freaking money that it doesn't even matter. So, I mean, basically the takeaway was this. A lot of people who listen to this might not follow wrestling or even watch the pay-per-view, so I'll give a quick rundown. Nia Jax defeated Alicia Fox. Nia Jax. New Day defeats The Club. TJ Perkins defeated Brian Kendrick. Cesaro and Sheamus tied.
Schmaz.
Jericho defeated Zayn. Charlotte defeated Sasha Banks and Bayley.
Pinned Bayley.
But, yes. Pinned Bayley. For storyline reasons. Pinned Bayley. Clean pin, too. Reigns defeats Rusev.
For the U.S. title.
Yep. And KO defended his championship, Universal Championship, against Rollins. And in the process, Rollins got injured, broken rib.
Karma. I mean, it's really what it boils down to. I mean, And there's some heat on Owens over it, but by the same token...
So is there a heat on Owens? Because this is
I read that like about an hour ago online that some people, obviously Triple H and Stephanie, are not happy that their golden boy is on the shelf because of a botch that technically wasn't really KO's fault. If you watch that spot where the rib gets broken, it's because Rollins shifts his weight on the way down.
Yeah, he contorts his body, he could have taken it
on his hip the way that most guys are going to take it on their hip. And he decided to move and take it at the bottom of his rib cage, and that's the most apt place to get any sort of fracture rib-wise.
See, it's funny that you started the segment with karma, because what I heard was that a lot of the boys in the back are upset with Rollins with injuring so many people, and they think, okay, this is your comeuppance for all the injuries you've caused. This is what you get. He doesn't have a lot of fans in the back right now. I was surprised with that, but at the same time, he's almost paralyzed like three different dudes, and
yeah.
So it is what it is. It'll be interesting to see how
in a weird way, I think it's also why he's not getting over as a face.
Well, this is where you and I differ, as I think the reason why he's not getting over the face, he gets the biggest pop. He got a standing ovation after the match. The reason why is because of stupid WWE writing, not just saying you're a face. What kind of face is upset that the heel corporation, the heel faction, doesn't want to have him?
Oh, that has nothing to do with it, dude.
But that's his character. Every week he comes out and he's like, you want KO instead of you want me. Like,
but
be
it
a
boils
face
down to the fact that once the pop subsides, when he walks out, he does nothing in ring to play to the audience or to do anything that's even considered good guy-ish.
Absolutely.
And that's why he's not getting it. It's him. It's not anything that's happening.
Well, it's
backstage.
Also, I mean, but
if he would put forth an effort, because here's the thing, dude.
But doesn't
nobody,
guys like Art Anderson lay that
wrestling,
out?
Nobody in wrestling wants to be a good guy.
Yeah, they all want to be heel.
They all want to be heel. And he had no intentions of ever becoming the good guy.
But the money is in him being face and going after.
But he's a guy like Daniel Bryan that's not in it for the money, man. You got to remember, look at how many years he spent in the gyms doing the indie stuff. You know, like, it really took WWE pursuing him and putting some real money on the table for him to give up the Tyler Black portion of his career in Ring of Honor and come on over.
So you know the ins and outs in the wrestling world behind the scenes.
A little.
So when they're laying out this match and you have the agent, say it's Art Anderson, and he's laying it out. Said, isn't that going to be a note from them saying, hey, listen, we need you to be a face in this, so you need to do some more face, you know, moves, tactics, bring that out in your character, and then he's just ignoring them? Or do you think that they want him to be a tweener?
I don't think he knows how to connect. You gotta remember, this is a dude that, like, in real life is kind of a lone wolf. Like, this is a dude that doesn't really interact with a lot of the boys. He's got some close friends in the business, but the majority of them are on SmackDown now.
Except when he's getting nudie pics from girls.
Well, no.
Holla.
Whatever, she wasn't that attractive.
She was a freaking racist. Anti-Semite, too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said a woman. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like the E is so wishy-washy.
Well, it's even Steven booking, which we've known from the get.
God, so, yeah.
You know, and it's in an effort to keep everybody on the same plane so that they're all WWE superstars. And until they really realize that there does need to be a clear and concise class level as far as the A, B, C, and then underneath guys, it's never going to work. I mean, you protected one guy over the course of the last 15 years in John Cena and nobody else.
Nobody.
You do realize that loss to Ambrose on TV was the first time he had lost on TV since 2006, right?
Yeah. I did not know that. His first clean loss.
No, first pinfall loss on TV in over 10 years.
He never lost on Raw ever?
Always ended in some sort of DQ or him winning or in a tag team match where he didn't take the pin.
I did not know that. Not surprised, though.
Look at me dropping knowledge
on
you,
right? Look at that. That's what I'm talking about. You only get that on the B show.
While we're doing that, let's jump into Raw.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, Raw was Clash of Champions Part 2. I mean,
to a degree.
You saw everything. So let's start with the opening segment. It was over 30 minutes long. Reigns, Rusev. Reigns retains the belts. He does his little cocky smile again. He dusted that bad boy off, sits in a chair, kind of mocks Rusev, then decides to hit him in the back with the chair. Crowd booed him when he walks out. Crowd cheers him when he's trying to kick out of a Rusev hold. Then they realize when he does, they're like, oh, crap, no, we don't like this guy. So they booed him.
Did you notice that instead of doing the boo-yay on the punch back and forth, they were doing
boo-boo? Boo-boo, yeah. I mean, I just don't know why you put the belt on a guy. I mean, I know why they did it, but if you're doing smart booking and you want to get this guy over eventually, he's the champ. He gets suspended. He loses the belt. Within a month and a half, he has another belt. If you want to see this guy climb and pay his dues or at least have a character where he's got to overcome obstacles, give it to him. Let Rusev beat his ass. Rusev is one of the most underrated guys on the roster and one of the biggest heels that they have.
I agree that he's a fantastic heel, but I will not say that he is underrated by any stretch because he has a lot of holes in his game.
And I'm not saying that he's perfect.
It's the subtle things. It's not the work rate.
But
he's
a heel. And right now they need heels.
There are big holes in his heel game.
But that's something with more experience. Like they give him this push for a month, then they take it away. They give him a push again, and then they take it away.
I'm sure it's something political that happened with Lana. She broke kayfabe publicly a couple of times by not using the accent in TV interviews that were intended for WWE specific things, which she knows she's not allowed to do.
Well, she single-handedly ruined the Ziggler storyline when she put the ring out there.
Well, you can't punish her because she's not an in-ring worker, so you've got to punish somebody, and they're punishing him.
So did you like opening up to Raw?
I like that there was a wrestling match to open the show. I don't like which match it was.
So this is how it broke down with the ratings-wise. 83 million people watched the debate Monday night. 83 million.
And 17 people watched Raw.
Pretty much. 8 million watched Monday Night Football. So that's some pretty stiff competition. Raw is right around the 2.4 rating. It is the lowest rated Raw ever. It's still a decent number to get when 83 million people are watching one thing and almost 10 are watching another.
Yeah.
But it's the lowest rated Raw of all time. But that first hour, the debate hadn't started yet, but it was close to the threes.
Yeah.
So people were invested in it. To me, it just was, I saw this the night before. Why do I need to see it again? If I'm going to watch 15 hours of wrestling, you can't repeat it.
Yeah. Well, let's run through these because I know we were both less than enthused about what happened.
Well, let's go. I think the biggest thing was Cesaro and Sheamus, at least on that show early on. What did you think since you predicted it? You did say it.
I think it's stupid. I think it's, truthfully, I think based on what's going on social media, I think it's a way for them to finally let Cesaro go over to SmackDown and be Cesaro. I mean, you saw the tweets from Daniel Bryan.
They're really pushing. They're
worked. So hopefully, it's a tag team. They implode. Cesaro's contract runs up or they fire him for breaking the tag team or whatever it is. He ends up on SmackDown where he belongs.
How long do you see this tag team together?
Who knows, man?
If I
drag it out till right before the next pay-per-view. The next Raw pay-per-view.
I think that unless they have something in the cooker for Cesaro to go to SmackDown, I think that this is going to go at least till the end of the year. I think that they might even put the belts on him. They like that oddball. Well, they've done it. I mean, going all
they
the way
have,
back
but
to the 80s.
There's too many other...
There's nobody in that. It's New Day
right
and the club. Nobody else in there is like...
No, there was somebody else up in that mix the other night, and I forget who it was.
It's the Puerto Rican dudes.
Enzo and Cass.
Yeah, but they haven't even tried to get in the tag team, which we'll get into. But I thought it was a waste of time for the fans to sit there and watch seven matches and then have it end like that was a little ridiculous. But I will say the highlight of all of that was I thought Mick Foley was awesome on the mic to try to get it over not only to the wrestlers but the fans of why he's doing it. I thought Mick Foley was really good on Raw. New Day defeats the club and the Kofi bleeding. So I have a little stat for you.
All right.
Do you know that the club has never beaten New Day?
Yes.
And every single match since August 1st, the club has lost. So, I'm just getting a note from our producer says faster pace, so I got to shut up. So, New Day, they win. Yay, the club loses. They're making the club look like punks. Boom, that's all I got.
No, but I will say this. They have intentionally made the club look more badass, more no-nonsense, and there's been no dick or fart jokes, which is a plus.
In what, the last week?
2 weeks.
Well, after that horrendous segment.
Exactly. Yeah. So now we can get back to the actual wrestling.
All right. Any thoughts on Stefan, the Mick segment storyline?
I hate
line?
It. It's too much. The fact that Daniel Bryan's calling them out on Talking Smack for taking too much time away from the wrestlers, I love it. And hopefully they realize what they're doing and they step back.
They'll never step back because it's Raw and they have 3 hours and it's the McMahons. But I do like Mick trying to do something different with the GM character. I do appreciate that. Cruiserweight match, Rick Swann, Cedric Alexander defeated Lince Dorado and Drew Gulak. I knew this was
I like Lince Dorado. I think he's fantastic. Yeah, he's awesome. Got a fantastic high-flying arsenal. I wish they would just treat these cruiserweights like the UFC and have a point system to rank them and then have them actually vie for the title.
Yeah, you bring up something real quick. So as far as like UFC rankings, do you see it ever with Vince McMahon once he's done and Triple H and Steph take over? Do you see them ever doing something where the wins and losses matter and there's a ranking?
Nope.
And so you're second, you're third,
nope,
and go up? Nothing like
nope.
that ever?
Nope. Not as long as Stephanie's involved.
I thought the match is good. They're giving him no time. The crowd wasn't into it. The packages happen right before they wrestle.
Yeah.
You've got to give a reason. Like, I don't even know who's in the cruiserweight division. So how the hell am I supposed to care or even know the characters if I don't even know who
preaching
are
the choir,
10
kid.
Guys? And the other thing is, I think you said this last week, you didn't like Rich Swann's dancing. I noticed it this week. He has the moves of Junkyard Dog.
Nope.
He does Junkyard's nope. little knees.
Nope.
Yeah, when he does the shimmy.
A little bit, but he's way more Coco Beware than he is Junkyard
Dog. Coco Beware, too. Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about Coco. He has the cheesiness of Coco. Okay, I put this in there. I think Charlotte is the biggest heel on the roster right now. It doesn't matter what she does or what she says, she gets booed. I think she's controlling the mic really well, controlling the audience.
The acting is still really poor.
It's wrestling, but I think...
I want to see Nia Jax come out and just squash her. And here's my biggest issue with Raw this week, and it's the same issue I have with SmackDown, are these holes they leave. So you've got Nia Jax on the kickoff show, dish-ragging Alicia Fox, and you do not follow it up on Raw. You've got 3 hours and a million mm-hmm. talking segments, and you don't put the best female worker since Awesome Kong in the ring, or at least on TV. How does that happen? How are you going to get her over as a heel if she's not consistently being seen by eyes and she's on every other week?
I agree with you. I enjoy SmackDown's women division much more because you get a taste of the entire division rather than the same.
I'd like a taste of Alexa Bliss.
Geez. Harley Quinn. It's the same three women that come out on Raw. It's the same three, and it gets boring. TJ Perkins' entrance theme. I liked it. Video game feel. I hate it. It's the Mega Man theme music. Kind of reminded me of Little Mac from Mike Tyson's Punch-Out. No, he does. There's no character work whatsoever.
And you know I'm not like, you know, anti-gay or whatever, you know what I mean? But he is just flat effeminate.
He's just flat boring.
Yeah.
I mean, he has no facial expressions. He has nothing.
It's because he's worked under a hood for the majority of his career.
Well, he works under a hood, but then going into the pay-per-view where he's defending his title, you don't even put him on Raw. You don't even introduce him. There's nothing there. Yeah. I mean, and then the one time he does talk, Kendrick, who I think is killing it on the mic right now.
Always has, man.
He was awesome in that.
The exchange backstage?
Backstage,
loved
yeah.
it.
I thought he was great in that. And he just walked away, kept it simple, to the point. Jericho's highlight reel. And then KO Jericho, again, this is where I thought Jericho, I could watch Jericho and KO interact with every single wrestler on the roster for 3 hours. That would be an entertaining Raw for me.
Good for you, man.
Because they are super sarcastic and funny. And I think they put on good matches.
I hate Jericho, man.
I know you do. I know there's a personal thing there. Real quick, do you think they, Survivor Series, NXT TakeOver, and there's one more that's happening.
No Mercy.
Raw. Is all happening in Toronto, Canadian boys for Survivor Series weekend. Do you think that's where they have the Jericho KO turn and they battle each other?
No,
for the
I
title?
Think they'll end up being some sort of jab at the Montreal screw job. There always is in Canada, especially when there's a Canadian wrestler in the match.
I hope not. Okay, so let's go to SmackDown. Bray Wyatt, Randy Orton, and all
no,
the...
Read what you actually put on there.
Are you interested? I'm sorry. SmackDown, are you interested in the Bray Wyatt or Randy Orton feud?
Nope. Next.
I have a couple points. Horrible sequence. They can't shoot horror or thriller. Why even attempt it? You could see the stage dressing in the back. It's stupid.
Which is why I just don't care. I don't care. It's two dudes that I love Bray Wyatt, and I hate the fact that they've done what they're doing with him, but I've never liked Randy Orton. So it makes me like Bray Wyatt less because he's tied to this hack-ass third-generation drug addict wrestler that can't stay healthy.
They don't have the cameras. They don't have the directors. It's too polished and clean to be like a reality style Blair Witch horror movie. But it's also so low budget and cheesy because it's all staged to actually feel like there's an emotional impact. I know you always give me crap about the Broken Matt Hardy segments, but there's between the staging, the shooting, the cheesiness, the acting, there's a purpose in each one of those segments.
I know, dude. That's propelled I'll sit through that story. Broken Matt Hardy if I never have to deal with the Wyatt Orton thing again.
And it's not even it's Wyatt, and then with the New Day too. They just do not know how to shoot that. What are your thoughts on Miz?
I love where they're going with it. I think it's 2 months too late. I'm looking forward to those guys tearing the house down at No Mercy.
That video package opening was fantastic with him. I said Jericho was best on Raw. Miz is the best on SmackDown on the mic. Story-wise, he has the passion, the character down to a T, and his wife there, it just adds a whole other dimension to his character.
You're going
to
see Dolph Ziggler start to cheat to win and slowly become a heel as he moves away from The Miz with the IC title after the pay-per-view.
So you think,
calling it now.
Okay, you think Zig wins?
There's no way, unless the idea is to do the stupid Mr. USA thing they did with Hogan 15 years ago and have Ziggler come back under a stupid mask.
I did like how Miz comes down. He goes, no Raw, no NXT, no 30-day sabbatical, because we're so used to that.
Yeah.
I thought, like, Miz says what so many of the audience is thinking. The other thing was, did you like Ziggler's part of the promo?
I did. I think he fired up. I hate the way his voice breaks, but it's part of who he is, yeah.
I think he did a really good job. I liked it. The problem is he's lost so many times in the past that
but
it doesn't
the
have
fact
the same
they're
impact.
Talking about that means yeah. that it's been planned.
But they did that with Ambrose going into the championship match with Ambrose, and then they did it in the
but
championship.
But I think it's a way to show this lack of winning from Ziggler.
So you don't see him leaving the E?
No, God.
His contract, he signed a pretty lengthy one last summer, right?
Yeah.
And then at the end, a lot of talk with this whole Cena 16-time champion.
It's
you,
not
going to
happen.
Put it on him at No Mercy?
It's not going to happen at a C-level pay-per-view. If they're going to do this with him, they're going to do it on the big stage, Rumble, Survivor Series, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, one of the big four. There's no way they're doing something that big in an insignificant pay-per-view.
Especially when he has to go away and shoot his reality show and he's going to be gone for a couple of months. For me, I like the direction of this Cena character. I like the edge, the arrogance almost. Before he's just like, oh, I'll rise to the top. Now it's just kind of like, I'm going to get it. That's mine. There's a tweak in his character. He was awesome on Talking Smack as far as dealing with Ambrose. I don't see him putting it on at No Mercy, but I think what's going to happen is, and I don't know if you said this last week or a couple weeks ago, I think Cena's going to go kind of on a losing streak, and then he has to overcome stuff, and he has to, you know.
You mean the formula they've been using his entire career?
Yeah, but his overcome stuff would be like 1 week or 2 days. Like he would lose on a Sunday, Monday he'd come back and be like, "I'm the man," and I can. There was no impact to any
Super
loss
Cena.
That he ever had. Exactly. I think that if they do it right and they want to make that 16th championship win impactful, have him lose, have it affect him. So then when he does win it, it means something to him and to the audience.
Yeah.
Anything on Ambrose?
Nope.
Like, are you and I just the only two non? Ambrose fans, because I just don't get it.
I hate it. With his goofy hair and his jeans and his black wife beater and his cheesy, stupid lines that he comes out with.
The same two, three, four wrestling moves.
The awful distance he leaves on punches, the non-believability of his finisher, the stupid bouncing off the middle rope bullshit. I'm over it. Stop it.
And then his whole, like, oh, yeah, I've hit guys in the balls before, but you can't do that in a championship match. And then literally the next sentence he says on Talking Smack, well, I've done it before, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you have to have a better reason that you lost the match. Straight up, you lost the match.
I think he's this generation Shane Douglas.
Wow, that's a great comparison. How long was he on top?
Of ECW for a long time. He was never really on top guy in the E or WCW.
So he's already surpassed Shane Douglas and WCW.
Oh, God, yeah.
So why do you have that comparison just as far as
the bitterness, the inability to see the forest for the trees as far as bigger names and his place in history and everything else?
You think there's a legit bitterness he has right now?
Absolutely. Because when he was John Moxley working CZW, you know, like hitting each other.
Did they call him Titty Master?
I don't remember.
It was like the... what was that? Titty Master or something?
But like, you know, the guys that used to fight with stupid fluorescent light bulb tubes and...
And backyard stuff. All right, so that was the week in wrestling. Again, we're recording this on a Wednesday, so we haven't gotten into NXT. TNA, Bound for Glory is this Sunday. I kind of touch on it in the news, but best wrestling moment of the week for you?
Alexa Bliss, Red Ends, white hot pants, smashing what's her nuts in the face a couple times. I'm not going to say I didn't get a little excited in the downstairs area, if you know what I mean. How you doing?
How you doing? Gosh, I feel rushed now because I have like all of this written out and professionally. So best wrestling.
At most 19 minutes until we're done with this.
Best wrestling moment of the week. For me, it is off the cuff. It is the video packaging that the E has that they did this week. God, I'm sucking today. Miz's career video piece I thought was phenomenal. It made him feel like a star. I see everything from when he was hosting SmackDown to Tough Enough to Real World. You're like, what a punk that guy was. I hated him. And what they did for him, I thought, on SmackDown was catapult him, that if he does lose the IC title, I could see him going for the, you know, being thrown into the main event picture. Because you got to go Cena and Ambrose have a one-off. So then I guess maybe Orton for AJ. But
no, because Orton's not going to be cleared to work for a while.
So they've got to do something with Miz, and I think he's just killing it right now. So that was the first one. The other one is I love the opening SmackDown video piece about the title match between AJ and Ambrose.
That was decent.
Thought that was really well produced. The two big things, and I don't know if you got to see any of them, was the two amazing 2K17 commercials. One spot featured the video game and the characters, the look, the moves. The other spot was much more of like a promotional WWE commercial that promoted the game with the actual real-life wrestlers. The first one, it had P. Diddy's Bad Boy for Life, had lots of KO, Baylor, Rollins, Sasha, Enzo Cass, kind of stood out. AJ was definitely the main player, so they're pushing him. Here, interesting, only one shot of Cena in the beginning and no Reigns. And I rewound that and froze. There's two quick shots of Reigns, but he's getting his butt kicked in a move, and they're quick cuts from that. So they're not even pushing him right there for that video game, which I thought was very surprising.
Well, it's because it's all about Lesnar and Goldberg.
Yeah, but when they would cut to the other wrestlers, they literally had every single other wrestler except for Reigns. I mean, they had Ambrose featured. They had AJ a bunch. They had KO a bunch, but they didn't have any Reigns, which stood out to me. I'm like, did I even see him in that? Again, do you see a Lesnar Goldberg match? Because they were really pushing it.
Probably, yeah. I would say WrestleMania this year, and hopefully it's better than the last abysmal failure the two of them put on.
Yeah, I agree. It'd be an entertaining thing. The second one was, did you see the Suplex City commercial? Fantastic.
Yeah. I don't care because I don't care about the video games.
I don't play video games. This is just me as like a production to tell a story. They made me want to check out this video game, even though I do not play them at all. Awesome song. Just the theme of that commercial was, if you really take a look at it, in every situation, whether it's the Undertaker, you see a hearse and it says Dead Man on it, to Ambrose standing up over to Rollins standing over the city where he looks like Batman, it's everyone that has gone to Suplex City and got their ass kicked. And then at the bottom, you see, you know, in this kind of Thunderdome world with Paul.
More Fight Club than Thunderdome.
Fight Club. Well, you know, when they're up on top shaking the cages and all that. It's
still Fight Club.
They didn't do that in Fight Club. Fight Club, everybody was down on the floor just like normal. It was just like the
Fight Club.
All right. Fine. Fight Club. Anyway. I thought those were two very well done, produced. They tell a story. There's a point to it. I just wish that they would actually carry that that storytelling into their actual show. Worst wrestling moment of the week for you?
Rich Swann's ring jacket.
What? I don't even remember what that looked like. What does this ring jacket look like?
It's like a faux leather jacket that you would get at like Marshall's on clearance, like in the middle of summer. You know what I mean? Like it sat there for that
long. He's an indie guy. Maybe he can't afford anything more than that.
They have an entire wardrobe department in the E, bro.
Yeah, but they have to pay for that, don't they?
Not always.
How does Enzo pay for all his stuff? He literally has a different outfit every single. Kaz just has his cutoff shirt and his little shorts.
His gym shorts.
How does Enzo pay for that?
Well, if you notice, it's on like a cycle. Like he wore the money pants. He's worn those a few times. Like I feel like he's got like five outfits and they come in a rotation.
I feel like I've never seen the outfit more than once other than the money pants. That's
no,
it.
No, he redoes a lot of that stuff.
Because he's good friends with Sasha. You think he's got Sasha's husband hooking him up with some wardrobe since he's
it's
like
possible,
the main wardrobe
the
guy?
The other thing you got to remember too, man, is like it's not really super expensive to sew together a pair of joggers with, you know.
But there's elaborate designs. There's a purpose to it. It takes time. It's not like KO walking out there in shorts and a t-shirt or even, you know.
You'd be
like
surprised
Cass
with some of these guys, dude. A lot of times you can walk into like some
Salvation Army or something.
Or like one of those knockoff stores in Manhattan where they sell like, you know, like the fake designer stuff. And then you just adapt that.
A lot of Hot Topic stuff, too.
But Rich Swann, just come on, man. Like, you're in the big time now, and you're still wearing, like, sneakers with kick pads, and your weird, like, leftover Halloween jacket, and your plain red trunks, and they've got little wings on them. Woo!
The wings thing catches me. Every single time I see him stand up, I'm like, is his shorts
if you
broken?
Want to be above it, you have to look above it, and he's not doing that job. Every other guy that's debuted on TV in that cruiserweight division makes him look stupid.
You think? I think like he again, he's going for that, you know, junkyard Coco Beware E, not
yeah,
before.
But he's coming off like Iceman King Parsons.
There's a reference I do not know, but I'll have to Google. But I will say one thing: Cedric Alexander is. Dude, that dude
phenomenal.
Is phenomenal. He is awesome.
But
he is awesome.
Again, he falls into that Neville, Apollo Crews sort of world where there's no character development. There's nothing to grab onto. There's no
right there. No character
nothing
development.
Nothing to touch and feel. So what your worst?
Worst is how they're treating the club. It's absolutely maddening to me that they put him in this horrible humor. They're trying to go comedic one for one with the New Day, failed miserably. They can't be badasses because they can never beat the New Day. They lose in mixed tag team matches. What has happened to the club? Yes, they've gotten a push. Yes, they're on TV every week. Yes, they're there. But you don't take them serious. You're not scared of them when they show up. The only time that they ever had anything good was against the Dudley Boys.
Time. It's one of those things where Vince is never going to push all of one thing at one time. AJ's on top on SmackDown, which means those two need to stay towards the mid card. And at some point, they'll ascend up, but it won't be at the same time AJ's at the top because they don't want too much New Japan, especially with how much social media there is with the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and, you know, the other dudes that are over in Japan.
Do you think if Finn stayed healthy, that they would have had AJ win SmackDown?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the worst of the week. I'm just, you have totally turned me on those guys. And show, you know, and the more I watch from their New Japan, they're awesome. And they should be badass ass kickers. And they're just floundering. It's the classic, they always lose. But they come out and they say they kick ass, so we're supposed to assume that they will. Would you rather segment?
I totally forgot about this. I don't have one, so we'll just do yours.
Would you rather have Hulk Hogan's career on and off, or, you know, personal life, professional life, or Bret the Hitman Hart's career on or off, in and out of the business? You could pick one. Like, you could live Bret Hart's life or you could live Hogan's life. Which one would you rather?
Bret Hart. 10 out of 10 times. There's no doubt in my mind.
Why?
Not a racist. Didn't make a sex tape. Doesn't have, like, that a we know son of. That killed somebody in a car thing. You know, like, I feel like I would rather be the dude that came from the legendary Hart wrestling family. That although he's a bitter piece of shit now, like, people still respect, and there's no respect left for Hogan.
I'm going to say...
Well, you're obviously going to go Hogan because you're Mr. Hollywood.
No, no, I'm going to go Hogan for... I'm going to go Hogan for a couple of reasons.
Wear the big yellow pants.
And, I hate Hogan because he's racist. I'm going to say Hogan. One was No Holds Barred.
Awful.
Awesome movie. Two is My Brother Wouldn't Die. That, I mean, honestly, if you're thinking about that, that's a huge part of his life, and he has to continue to, you know, have it thrown in his face because it was a very
it's
public
not like he
death.
Was there.
No, but it's a very public death, and he's, you know, the issues with his sister-in-law and the E now. And
really, you'd rather deal with a son that almost murders somebody in a drag racing thing.
Didn't he? Oh, did that guy never die?
He never died.
I forgot
He's
about
still
the
on life
thing.
Support.
No, I mean
a wife that you know.
Who do you think is happier now, right now? Because Brett is pretty freaking miserable. It seems like.
I think they're both miserable.
I think Hogan lives in his own world where he doesn't even know.
No, he definitely is a miserable dude. Like, you got to understand that. Like, once you're out of the spotlight, especially after the wrestling business, it just look how miserable I am about wrestling. And all I ever did was run security and help with a couple of angles. You know what I mean? Like. Yep. Once the industry eats you up very easily. So for those guys to be as bitter as they are, I totally get it.
All right. So you'd rather be Bret Hart. All right. So now is our segment of our top 20 favorite wrestlers. Number 19 is this week.
Picks I went first last 19. Week, so you get to go first this week.
My number 19 is Jimmy Superfly Snuka. This was difficult for me because as a kid, I loved Snuka. I thought he was larger than life. I always migrated towards the non-white wrestlers growing up. He was the ultimate badass. You know, what he did with his tongue, high-flying, freaking crazy ripped. I just loved his look. I loved his moveset. I was always excited to see him come out. But then as an adult, when I started to learn about his personal life and who he was, it's hard for me with him, much like a Benoit, to separate it. I put him on here because I only really...
Snuka and Benoit, dude. Snuka just shoved a lady down a flight of stairs. Benoit murdered his whole family in cold blood. There's no comparison.
I'm not saying that they're on the same level, but...
Like, you've never shoved a bitch down the stairs.
Never once. No. Nor have I killed a woman shoving her down down the stairs. He still killed somebody.
I'm just
somebody.
Kidding. I have never shoved a woman down the stairs.
Yeah, sure.
A couple dudes, maybe, but never abroad.
So, no, I mean, it's hard for me. But, again, this is who my favorite wrestlers were as I was watching... You have made it abundantly clear over these last 7 months. I really only watched one promotion. So that's kind of like where my list is going to be focused on. And, you know, there's a couple other oddballs. But some of the highlights for him is that surprised me. One is he never, ever, ever held a belt in WWF. Never once.
Not once.
Not once. That blows my mind away.
You know who else also didn't? His biggest rival, Roddy Piper.
He never held the tag team or Intercontinental?
You don't need to.
But it just...
When you're the biggest heel in the business, why do you need a belt? When you're one of the biggest faces and most over faces, why do you need a belt?
I knew Piper never got the championship. I thought for sure he had won something. Nope. He was not inducted into the Hall of Fame in 96. He was the first...
Oh, you know what? I take it back. Piper ended up with the Intercontinental title from Bret Hart in the 90s.
Yeah,
but if we're talking the first era of Piper as a heel, yeah.
Like, what was it, 84 when they had their big...
That was WrestleMania. The first WrestleMania was 85.
Well, so you had that. He was the first opponent for The Undertaker to start the streak. I didn't realize that.
That was at the very tail end of his useful career. He was wearing boots and a singlet at that point.
Yeah, it was WrestleMania 7. He was the first ECW heavyweight champion. Well, it was Eastern Championship Wrestling at the time, but now, you know, then it became Extreme Championship Wrestling. So I thought that was interesting. The two biggest moments for me was his feud with, I remember this when I was younger, his feud with Piper, and it was 84.
83, 84.
And... when Piper hit the coconut over his head. And
you know
Piper's
that was
pit.
Real, right? Yeah. It wasn't worked at all.
At the time, I thought it was real. Then when I got older, I thought it was work. Then I realized it was real.
It's 100% real. They've both done, before Piper died, they did shoot interviews where they were like, Piper was like, I'm not sure how this is going to work, so I'm just going to hit you in the head as hard as I can with this. And Snooker was like, it was a coconut, bro. It'll break. And it did, thankfully.
So he didn't do it out of anger, but he legitimately hit it with
it.
Oh,
yeah.
And I remember when, again, separating childhood from adulthood, Snooker got his, neck broken or back broken from Piper, so he was away. That was the storyline. But in reality, he was away on rehab during that time in 84 and 85. And then who took over for him in that feud?
The Tonga Kid.
The Tonga Kid took over his feud with Piper. So I remember that. I'm like, oh, my gosh, he broke his back? Like, Piper's an ass. Like, I hated him as a kid. Hated him. That one, and then when he came back in 89, I was huge into the whole Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, and Virgil storyline.
Let me ask you a question now, since those are your two biggest moments. How do you not have
Hulk
him jumping off the cage in Madison Square Garden on Don Morocco as one of the biggest moments of his career?
I didn't say the biggest moment, probably because I didn't see it as a kid.
That changed wrestling.
Yeah.
It was the second time it ever happened, because he missed on Backlund when he was a heel, when he came in and challenged for the WWF title. Yeah. That was the first time he actually landed it, was on Morocco in Madison Square Garden. It inspired Mick Foley to become a professional wrestler.
And you knew him personally, and you have a lot of your own snooker stories. So that was kind of my beats. I didn't see that live.
I never knew him personally. I've met him a couple of times, very briefly, but it's not like we were exchanging Christmas cards.
Didn't you work with him during your promotion, or was that just stories that you heard of?
No. Those were stories we heard. Oh. And I also had an idea to do a zombie Jimmy Snooker thing where we made him live with Josh. And then we would just cart him out because he acts like a zombie all the time anyway. We were just going to paint his face up and put a bite mark on him.
You have tons of snooker stories. You have one?
No, because we're running short on time. I'll tell the snooker story, the one that I think you're fishing for, when he comes up on my list. So we do have one in common, which I was wrong about. So my pick is a dude whose career was cut short because his wife was diagnosed and actually died from leukemia. He is the Russian nightmare. He is Nikita Koloff. In my opinion, one of the most underrated workers of his time, discovered by Road Warrior Animal in a gym in Minneapolis. This is a dude that was trying to become a professional football player, was going to go to the CFL, and Animal talked him into, hey, why don't you come to the gym, work out with us? You know, we can probably get you a job, down in Georgia or Florida. And he came onto the scene, an American-born Midwestern kid, and shaved his head, started doing a bunch of steroids, learned Russian.
He learned Russian. He had no Russian in his
basis
background?
In it whatsoever.
Wow, I did not know that.
No blood relation to Ivan Koloff, obviously. Mm-hmm. He came in at a time and replaced a gentleman by the name of Don Kernoodle, who was teaming with Ivan Koloff. And that was his introduction, was the two of them kind of shithoused Kernoodle, put him to the curb. Ivan was at an age where he couldn't really compete in ring as well as he wanted to, was suffering from some knee injuries. A dude that started his career in the late 60s, you're now talking like 83, 84. So a dude was brought in by the name of Crusher Khrushchev, played by a gentleman named Barry Darso, who went on to become one half of Demolition, Repo Man, Blacktop Bully, countless other characters throughout his career, including Golf Pro Barry Darso in WCW in the early 2000s. But Nikita Koloff was an anomaly. This was a dude who was just a straight monster. I mean, if you were a fan of the Road Warriors, he was your ass-kicking kind of dude. He basically relied on punch-punch-kick, body slams, but I will tell you...
That worked back then, though.
It did. It did, especially in the territory days. This was a dude that had a clothesline called the Russian Sickle that, in my opinion, is probably the second best clothesline in the industry. And we'll get to who has the number one clothesline in the industry.
What made it the second best?
He did not care that he was destroying you. Like, this is a dude that threw everything he had into that. And if you didn't time it right to take it and take your own feet out from underneath you, you got wrecked.
So
he was very stiff in ring.
Oh, I don't want to ask who your number one is because that you said
it's coming later.
Later
on,
okay, all right.
But Nikita Koloff, one of my favorites of all time. He was imposing he was scary. He was a dude that, like, as when I was, I mean, because I was 10 years old when this dude debuted. And it was scary to think about, because when there was still all of the Cold War stuff, yep, that was happening in the world, and here comes this monster bald roid freak that's just running over people in the ring, and he had the Russian accent down. He could speak the Russian. He scared the hell out of me as a kid.
How long did it take him to learn Russian? I wonder. I mean, coming from the Midwest, that's not an easy language to learn.
Well, you know, it's wrestling, so I don't know how much
it
was
broken. It's like, yeah, one or two lines.
But his English definitely sounded like he was a Russian immigrant.
Yeah.
You know, he went on to win the 6-man tag team titles with Uncle Ivan, Crusher Khrushchev, multi-time U.S. champion, challenged Larry Zbyszko towards the end of his run in the AWA for the world heavyweight title there. Took some time off when his wife Mandy got sick. When she passed away, he did decide to come back and try again with a feud with Lex Luger. He was very, very different, much smaller guy, stopped with the steroids because he knew where it was headed. Actually grew in a crew cut, started wearing like both the Russian sickle and American flag on, mm-hmm, his tights, and it just wasn't the same.
Yeah.
It was kind of like a sad caricature of what had once been great. And again, you know, based on this Sheamus and Cesaro thing, Nikita Koloff was half of the original and, in my opinion, best of seven series of matches ever with Magnum TA back in 1985, before Magnum's career got cut short in that tragic car accident.
What promotion was that on?
Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Is that
might have been
the
Jim Crockett Promotions at that point.
Is that on the network?
I don't know. He also won the Jim Crockett Cup with Dusty Rhodes as his tag team partner, one of the original big tournaments, mm-hmm, that WCW JCP used to run.
Nice. So can you see any of his matches or anything either on the network or
don't have
on YouTube?
It, so I can't tell you. It's obviously all over YouTube. Just put in Nikita Koloff.
Definitely check that out. All right, so let's get into a couple BS news report segments. One, Cesaro said he's giving up the move through the middle rope since he almost broke his neck, which is smart. UFC 205, Madison Square Garden, November 12th. This card is sick.
It has to be. It's the debut in New York State, New York City.
It might be the best, if these matches happen, the best card going.
Run them down. Let's hear them.
So it's Tyron Woodley versus Tyron Woodley versus Stephen Thompson. Eddie Alvarez versus Conor McGregor. Chris Weidman versus Yoel Romero.
Chris Weidman?
Why did I say Weidman?
You said Weidman.
Weidman. Yoel Romero. And then two chicks that are badasses, but I'm not even going to try to attempt. You want to hear? They're written right there. Good luck with that.
Johanna something and Carolina something. Both look Polish to me.
I could have done that. Anyway, every single one of the people on the main card have either main evented fight night for UFC or pay-per-view. It's and then that, if you haven't seen it, go watch the presser from the Garden yesterday. It is top-notch mic work.
You're
promo.
Top-notch, bro.
Thank you, brother. It's just awesome. It gets you excited for it. I'm trying to get us tickets to see if you and I can get down there and go check it out.
Yo, so, if you make that shit happen, I'll go.
All right.
On your dime.
I'm working that. This weekend, TNA Bound for Glory pay-per-view sale of the company is still in question. Corgan wants to have it sold and have the new owner and the money to put on the pay-per-view. And now WWE
he should use
his
Smashing Pumpkins money.
He had bought like 20% of it. So, and now the E has made a second offer on it. It's official. And they are, one of the people that are going after it. So, what do you think about that?
I'll give him $200. Yo, Dixie, I got 200 cash.
I think it was like 4 million.
Yeah. And
$4 million.
That's still a little more than I think it's worth, but to get the talent that's there and
look at all those matches. I mean, they have half those guys like AJ, Samoa Joe, Angle, Hogan. I mean, Flair, you have all of that stuff that you would own that library for your network. $4 million is nothing.
Right. That's and like, plus you get to exact some revenge on the guys that left to go there.
Exactly. Ryback has got an offer from Bellator MMA. You want to see him fight?
Nope. Well, actually, I do, because I want to see him get his ass kicked.
I do want
to
see
that.
You
know he legally changed his name to Ryback, right?
Yeah.
Ryback.
Yep.
That's that dude's real name now on his driver's license, is Ryback.
Yep. I want to see
that's some
him.
Ultimate Warrior shit. Maybe this dude will die of a fucking heart attack after WrestleMania. Oh,
well, first he's got to get
sorry,
into
I went
the,
to a dark place there.
He's got to get into the Hall of Fame first.
True, and that's not going to
happen.
That's
not happening.
He's barely going to get into
I
the
I
want to
see that freaking hunk of slab meat.
There's no way that dude's passing a drug test.
Or he can't go through a fighting camp, a training camp, his bot. There's no way, but I will watch that fight if it happens.
If Kimbo Slice didn't die, that would be a great
there
fight.
There was a rumor that it was going to be Jose Canseco versus him. I would watch that in a heartbeat in all of its glory.
Yeah, we should bring back
stupidity.
Celebrity boxing. Remember that on
oh,
Fox?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
All right, next.
And then Luke Harper, is he joining Raw or SmackDown?
No comment.
Luke Harper, is he joining Raw or SmackDown?
No comment, man.
You don't have to give me a comment from him. Just give me a comment on what you think.
I think he's going to the flagship show.
You do? You don't think he'll be the third person back with the Wyatts?
I think it's a step backward for him, and I think he would leave before he let that happen.
Ooh, inside information.
Nope.
And let's, before we give our little sign off.
Yo, I gotta ask you a question.
This is the last one. Yeah.
I gotta ask you a question.
All right.
Guess which bitch got arrested this
and
week?
It was my last thing right here. After our last show last week, Dixon's rant of his fave superstar, Sonny. She was arrested once again and spent the weekend in jail.
She's still in jail.
Yeah, she's still in
jail. She gets arraigned on October 3rd, and if the judge decides, yeah, if the judge decides that she violated her probation, she goes immediately to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Get the fuck in jail.
Well, she did. She did. That's why she's arrested, because she was on probation, and then she didn't show up for a court-mandated drug alcohol test. She skipped it. They had a warrant out, arrested her, threw her ass in jail, and now she's stuck there. I had tweets that said, is this before or after she got arrested? I said, this is before. We recorded that on a Thursday. She got arrested, I think, on a Friday night or something like that.
It was technically early Saturday morning.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So, yeah. So, your thoughts on that? Your girl, Sonny, in jail.
She deserves it.
Did you start the GoFundMe page to bail her out?
I hope she dies in jail.
Oh, jeez, I'm crow. We're going to end like that? I'll start a GoFundMe page. To bail her out.
Cool, and then we'll just use it to go to New York City to see UFC.
That's what I'm talking about. All right, sign off right here. Follow us on Twitter at B Show Wrestling. You can follow us on Facebook. Like our page. You can find us at The B Show, a wrestling podcast on Facebook. Please subscribe, download, review our show. 5-star rating. The more you guys do that, the higher it goes up iTunes. And the more
hot dogs Jay's going to eat.
Holler. That's right. So thank you. We'll see you next week.
Maybe.
Hopefully.
Doubtful.